Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We appreciate all the great stuff you're doing. Hey, this program is sponsored in part by AppletreeMediaWorks.com in the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. Joining me today, we've got Josh Sword. He is the president of the West Virginia AFL-CIO. Josh, welcome back.
Hey, buddy. Good afternoon. How are things going?
Josh, I got to tell you, man, we here in Pennsylvania are looking at you and your governor and kind of like, what? He used to be a Democrat. Now he's a Republican, and we're not quite sure if he really means it or not.
Oh, I hadn't heard that yet.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm kidding. Obviously, we don't really know what's going on. Best we can tell that, he's had this personal relationship with the president and the president's family for some time. They have a lot of commonalities.
They eat ribs together.
Billionaires, and they've crossed paths and developed a relationship over the years, and he's just had this sort of infatuation with Mr. Trump since he was elected president. And over the last month or two, Jim Justice, our governor, has made a few different trips to Washington to meet with him, and I haven't been privy to those conversations, obviously, but the governor, for some reason, believed that if he switched parties on stage with Donald Trump at a rally here in Huntington, West Virginia, that Donald Trump would do something really special for West Virginia. So he did it. And
waiting for the pretty princess unicorns and the rainbows?
Literally every West Virginian is out on their porch or looking out the window waiting on that very thing right now.
There you go.
So we're going to be the land of milk and honey in no time. We just don't know what it's going to look like.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Now, West Virginia is a wonderful place. But I got to tell you, I wish my friends in West Virginia had some better paying jobs, jobs that are going to be around, jobs that can sustain families, jobs that provide for a respectable, reasonable retirement, so on and so forth. I bet that's what West Virginians are looking for too, huh?
That's right. And let's be clear about this. When we endorsed Jim Justice, he had just won the Democratic primary last year, and we endorsed Jim Justice because of his position on the issues that are important to us. It did not matter which party he was representing. We endorsed him based on his positions. So until we get a chance to have this face-to-face with him and ask him if this change in party registration impacts his position on the issues that we care the most about, then we're gonna continue to move forward under the assumption that he hasn't changed on those issues. I mean, there's no reason to make that assumption. And in fact, he's got a proven track record that he was still committed, is committed, and will remain committed to our position on the issues most important to us. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the dynamics of all this unfold. He's really frustrated with Democrats in the legislature, even though they're in the minority in both the House and the Senate. He's blaming them for not getting a few of his things through at the end of the last session. He thinks, on top of the Trump factor, this is going to help him get some of his agenda to move forward. But he still has a few progressive ideas that he wants, and he's still talking about them even today, a week later, that he wants to move forward on. And I don't think that that's going to change his relationship with the Republican legislative leaders. Now, this is, maybe this is the case in other states, but in West Virginia, the governor is the leader of whatever party they represent. So if that still holds true in West Virginia, then he now is the de facto leader of the Republican Party here, and he's been going at it with a number of Republican leaders and operatives throughout the state for a long time now. So I don't know how this is all going to play out.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. Just get the Orville Redenbacher, pop it, and sit back and enjoy the show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah, but, you know, that's half the fun about it. Hey, you know, I sit back and I think to myself, you know, there are a lot of things that we can do collectively as a nation for our brothers and sisters in West Virginia. And I want to fully stipulate to this. Coal miners powered this country for a very, very long time. And they put themselves into harm's way on a daily basis. And they deserve each and every benefit that they negotiated in those union contracts and then some. And quite frankly, anybody who doesn't treat a miner in an appropriate manner, shame on them. But now is a time where we need to help our mining families and communities, and we need to do something that is going to continue to power this country. And I'm thinking to myself, Josh, you know, if we could put large-sized solar manufacturing facilities, large-sized wind turbine manufacturing facilities, that stuff's not rocket science. Okay, but it's good solid welding skills. It's good solid machining skills. It's good solid mechanic skills. And gee, do you think we have any in the mines?
Look, we've got the best, and this is obviously biased, but you know, I believe we have the best workers in the country, right here. We just need a little help and some guidance and some resources to get folks retrained. And point it in the right direction, and you know, that's all we've asked, really. That's all we've asked, and you know, unfortunately, what happens is you have those in the coal industry, the coal barons. They're afraid to acknowledge that the future is going to look very different for the coal industry. I mean, they're still saying no, we want it all, instead of going out and cutting, you know, a really good deal, you know, for their companies and their and the communities in which they mine coal in. And as a result, we've seen, especially in southern West Virginia, take an enormous hit economically, because the coal barons have essentially prevented diversification of the economies down there. And really, the first step is to acknowledge that it's not going to be the way it used to be moving forward.
Right.
But how do we make it the best that we can?
You know,
if we can get them to acknowledge that, then we can take a step in the right direction.
And I agree with you, Josh. But one of the things I got to point out, and I learned this recently in a conversation. You know, the coal miners have been very, very proud of producing coal and for electricity and other things that it's needed for a very long time in this country. But also, coal miners, union and not yet union, have also been very proud of the fact that they stood up and they fought back against the coal barons and they fought for their communities. I would submit to you wholeheartedly that now is a time for us collectively as a nation to sit up and say, you know what, number one, for the drop in a bucket that it takes to ensure that everybody's pension is in place and everybody's health care is in place for all 50 to 75,000 miners that are going today, that's a drop in the bucket, okay? But we can make sure that those pensions are in place and they stay there, the health care coverage is there, and it stays there. And all the retirees are protected too. Now what we do is we set up the training facilities. You know this as well as I do. The building trades can set up the training facilities for wind turbines or solar or whatever they decide to do. Get the training done and get West Virginia's manufacturing stuff that they're going to export not only out of the state but out of the country.
Well, that's exactly right. And we need to be collective in our voice about those issues. I mean, this is a critical time for us, because as we transition away from, you know, more diversification within our energy portfolio, we've got to take advantage of the workers that we have in place that are trained. And it's not a big transition for those things.
No,
it's not a big transition. But we need a fair playing field. And you know what? Maybe at the end of the day, this belief that our governor has that Donald Trump will do something special for West Virginia. You know, maybe that's a part of the equation. I don't know.
I got an idea.
We've got workers here ready and willing and able. They just need, you know, a little bit of training and an opportunity, and we're ready to go.
There you go. Josh, we're going to take a short break. We'll come back. We'll talk some more, okay?
Thanks, buddy.
I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.
300 conservation jobs are being created in Texas and other Gulf Coast states with restoration funds from the Deepwater Horizon oil spill in 2010. The $7 million project, funded by fines from the incident, will repair and restore coastal areas damaged by the oil spill in Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida. Mary Ellen Sprinkle with CORE Network, a group that organizes young adults to do conservation work, says the job will go to people from towns where the work needs to be done.
We will be working with our existing programs in the Gulf State to train young people in their communities to do this restoration work, to provide the young people with training to do the ecological recovery, and provide them with career opportunities.
The partnership, called Gulf Corps, includes the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the Nature Conservancy, the CORE Network, and the Student Conservation Association. Grant funds from the Restore Act will be used to plant native vegetation, remove invasive species, and restore stream banks and shorelines. In 2010, a BP oil platform exploded 25 miles off the coast of Louisiana and dumped almost 5 million barrels of crude oil into the Gulf before it was capped. Sprinkle says it's important that people from the hardest hit areas will be hired for the CORE projects.
I think that it's an opportunity to maybe bring something positive out of the oil spill in terms of engaging and providing opportunity to young people in some very economically depressed communities.
Sprinkle says the project will have similar goals and objectives to the Civilian Conservation Corps, President Franklin D. Roosevelt's Great Depression undertaking in the 1930s. She says there's still a great deal of work to be done in coastal areas since the spill.
This is definitely cleaning up the original problem. A lot of the oil is gone, but this is ecological problems that were caused as a direct result and absolutely need to be addressed. It speaks to the fact that the recovery dollars have been so slow in hitting the ground.
Gulf Corps officials say they will begin hiring for the positions this fall. For Texas News Service, I'm Mark Richardson.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Hey, America. We need to have a little talk. We've got a lot of food in this country. We've got so much food that we can't eat it all. So how are 17 million kids in America struggling with hunger? That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and gets it to hungry kids who need it. Support Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We enjoy your company. Joining me today from West Virginia and the West Virginia AFL CIO, we've got Josh Swart. Josh, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Always a pleasure, Josh. We appreciate it. So, Josh, what else have you got going on in West Virginia?
Well, you know, Labor Day's right around the corner, and there are tons of celebrations all over the state. So, you know, we're getting prepared for those. Always a great weekend to celebrate all labor has done for, you know, West Virginia and the rest of the country. So looking forward to that celebration. Then in mid-October, we're going to have our convention in which we turn 60 years old. So we're going to look forward to that celebration as well. And then right after the convention, we're going to transition into a legislative session, which will begin in January, and then the 2018 election will be front and center. And we're going to make taking back control of our legislature with working friendly legislators our top priority, as well as making sure we send our good friend Joe Manchin back to the United States Senate.
Josh, what are you hearing from our brothers and sisters that voted for Donald Trump and then came to realize that when it came to health care, when it came to jobs, and when it came to some other things, that probably wasn't the best pick they could have made?
I'll tell you, it was the health care issue that I heard the most about. You know, we had when you look at the numbers and the statistics, West Virginia benefited from the expansion of Medicaid more so than any other state. We had over 200,000 people able to pick up affordable health care as a result of that. On top of that, you know, you had the pre-existing condition language and the ability to keep children on till 26. I mean, those were huge things for West Virginia citizens. And I'll be honest with you, I think they got sort of wrapped up in the, you know, this is not a politician, I'm going to bring all your coal jobs back and bring, you know, all the mills, the steel mills back along the rivers all throughout West Virginia. And they sort of bought into the Donald Trump campaign rhetoric and forgot about some of these other things. Well, you know, he's elected president, obviously. One of the first things he wants to do is repeal the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. And when people started figuring out what Obamacare actually was, then people were literally rioting in the streets here. And I'll tell you, the light bulbs have gone off, and they're paying really close attention to what's going on, especially on the healthcare front here.
Absolutely. And what is it that you're hearing from constituents in West Virginia? Do they want the Affordable Care Act? Do they want it fixed and repaired and, you know, work on the things that need worked on, reinforce the things that are doing good? Or do they want something else?
Oh, no. It very clearly now, they want to fix what's broken. This whole idea of starting from scratch and kicking 200,000 people off their health care and letting insurance companies discriminate based on pre-existing conditions and age is a non-starter. Non-starter here. So they understand, and we do have some serious problems related to controlling costs within health care, but let's fix the problems within the Affordable Care Act and the healthcare system in general, because it's not just the Affordable Care Act. I mean, we have some unsustainable problems that if we don't address, and I'm in the camp, by the way, that we've got to do something, because not doing anything, I think, puts the whole program at a greater risk.
Right.
I mean, you look at what they're getting ready to start talking about in Washington, D.C. right now with tax reform. If they don't get what they want to through a piece of legislation directly related to health care, we need to pay really close attention to what they do on the tax reform side that will indirectly impact the financial side of, you know, all the federal programs that support, essentially, in a place like West Virginia, our entire infrastructure when it comes to health care through Medicaid and Medicare. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens the next few months. And, you know, I'm not convinced that this is over. I think we've got to get something, because if not, I think it becomes worse in the long run. Hopefully they can figure out, you know, the best way to navigate through that. I know Joe Manchin is involved in a lot of closed-door discussions right now related to trying to protect especially West Virginians who were able to get, you know, lower-cost health care coverage through the expansion. And those already on Medicaid, too. I mean, look, some of the things they were talking about were impact literally everybody on Medicaid and then anybody that has a private policy. I think they've got to get to work on it, but, you know, doing nothing is pretty dangerous.
Right. You know, and here's my take on it. You know, the opposition may not like the color of the bridge or where we put it or, you know, how it was designed and everything else, but if you don't maintain it and it fails, guess what? It's not the guy who designed its fault. If you don't maintain it and you don't take care of it, it's your fault.
There's no doubt about it, and we can't sustain the annual rates of inflation within our system. I mean, when you're talking about 10-12% annual rates of inflation, no other sector in our economy is allowed to grow at a rate like that. We've got to get our hands and figure out a way to sustain that, or it's not sustainable. It's gonna all come. I mean, if we thought the housing collapse was an impact to our economy, wait till the healthcare collapse hits our economy. I mean, it could devastate us.
No, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. And we need to be productive. We need to make sure that we are looking out for the people within the community. And if we're not, and we're not doing the right things by picking up the phone and calling our legislators, you know, we got a hand in it.
We got to keep telling our representatives in Congress our personal stories, because they get up there, not all of them, but some of them get up there and they get sort of in the bubble and they feel insulated from what's going on back and up and down the creeks and hollers here in West Virginia. And they lose sight of what they're there to do. We've got to keep telling our personal stories over and over again to make sure they understand that it's not just letters and numbers on a paper when they make votes in Washington, D.C., that real lives are impacted. And then we have to hold them accountable at the next election, because that's really the only time that our voice truly and totally matters is at the ballot box, and we got to take advantage of that.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely. Hey, we got about a minute left. Anything else we should know about what's going on in West Virginia?
Well, we're just going to keep plugging away. We're going to go meet with our new Republican governor and make sure he's committed to supporting us on our issues. And if he is, then we're going to continue supporting him as much as we possibly can. But if his party switch also leads to his change on positions of the issues that are important to us, then, you know, we're ready to go to war with him as well. So really the burden's on him. I hope he hasn't changed his position on the issues important to us.
No, I hope you're right too. And quite frankly, if he does, shame on him. Because the people that helped get him to where he's at, you know, you're letting them down.
That's right. So until then, he's still, you know, our endorsed candidate and our endorsed governor, and we're going to treat him until we have a reason not to. And simply changing parties is not a reason.
There you go. I'm not going to let a politician get between me and another union brother or sister. Meantime, Josh, we got to get going. We appreciate your time, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
Hey, thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
Always a pleasure. Josh Sword, I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.